have a TV?
No. I just like to read the TV guide.
I heard you on my wireless back in 52, lying awake, intent and tuning in on you. If I was young, it didn't stop you coming through.
Oh, oh.
They took the credit for your second symphony, rewritten by machine on new technology. And now I understand the supernova scene.
Podcast episode 269. I'm Matt Durson.
I'm Clay Inferno.
And we have a special guest this week, everybody. Say hello to Ken Reed.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello, Ken.
I should have said the host of TV Guidance Counselor Podcast.
It's true.
Ken Reed. So it's always interesting. I want to say this, and this is with an unblemished record of heterosexuality, but you have a really good podcast voice, Ken.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Just, I don't know why that is.
I don't know. It's just I don't know. You should be reading the news or something, maybe.
Oh, really? See, I always, I mean, I have to listen to myself so much when I'm editing the show, and I'm, you know, fed up with it. And I'm constantly trying to suppress my Boston accent, so I tend to focus on those two things. So
yeah.
So thank you for saying that.
I have the worst voice ever. I'm all nasally.
I don't think so. And the nice thing about podcasting, having changed the world, is that the classic radio voice is kind of no longer a factor.
That's true, because everybody does it. Everybody, voice or no voice.
Yeah, and if you listen to like NPR, which is kind of the bar for radio voice, it's completely opposite.
Oh,
all those pregnant pauses. And
oh, Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whatever they call it.
Yeah, that vocal crackle.
Yeah, the vocal crackle.
Or fry, is that what it's called?
Yeah, vocal fry.
Fry.
Is that a
fry an egg on that thing.
Is that a landline you have there?
What?
Is that phone ringing in the
back? No, it was my phone. I'm sorry. I don't know who that was, but I didn't recognize the number, so I hung up. How dare they call during podcast? Oh, well.
But I feel like Ken's, like, just years and years of watching tons of TV kind of gave him that, like, voice of God, you know, come on down.
It could be. Right kind of thing. I mean, I am a big Dana Hersey / Shadow Stevens fan.
Oh, Dana Hersey. He threw the movie Loft.
Indeed he did.
I love that. Yes, he does have that very soothing sort of, yes. Tonight on the movie Loft. Oh, wow. Yeah, see, local boy here. Is it Winchester?
Close. I was born in Winchester. Grew up in Melrose, yeah.
Melrose, all right. And you went to Northeastern, is that right?
I did indeed, sadly.
Sadly? Okay. Oh, no. Why sadly? Because it takes 5 years?
I joke about it. Well, yeah, it was very very expensive. My loan is not paid off till 2029, and I did graduate quite a while ago. I think that I would have had a bad experience no matter what college I went to, because it was just, you know, I wasn't very social. But yeah, I don't look back fondly at my time at Northeastern. I didn't learn very much.
Oh, that's a bummer. I didn't really learn much. I went to Emerson, and I didn't really learn anything there either. So.
Well, that's good to know. I got in at Emerson, but couldn't afford it.
Couldn't afford it. I don't know why I went. I mean, I guess I thought it would be cool. Like, a lot of famous people went there. I think I was taken in by that. I was like, whoa, really? Dennis Leary and Stephen Wright and all these famous people? I'll go
Mark
there.
Maron.
Yeah, Mark Maron. And in the 90s, we had that terrible show Boston Common that was set in a fictional version of Emerson.
I know. That was a terrible show, wasn't it?
It really was. But the main girl was cute. I forget her name. She's in Dirty Work. She was in like four things in a one-year period and then completely disappeared off the face of the earth.
She probably just made enough money from those four things. And
well, Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place was a huge hit.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yeah, okay. You really do know your TV trivia in there.
It's sad.
No, it's good. Let's talk about your TV Guidance Counselor Podcast for a second here. So if you want to tell the listeners What goes on over there?
Yeah. Well, I essentially own every issue of TV Guide, which is my working definition of that is about every issue from 1965 to around 2000, with some before and some after. And I've had them for years, and I have them in this big spinning rack in the corner of my house, and I would rotate out, you know, some from the basement. And when people would come over my house, if we were just sitting around hanging out, people would flip through the TV guides, and we'd go, oh, remember this show? Look at this, you know, whatever. And so comedian Sean Sullivan, very funny comedian, recommended to me, said, why don't you just do this as a podcast? So that's essentially what we do. Someone picks an old issue of TV Guide. They write down what they'd watched that week in primetime. They hand me the TV Guide. They have their list. I press record and we go. And that's sort of the strict format version of the show. And weirdly, in the two-ish years that I've been doing it, I've managed to get people who I have no business speaking to on the show, who have been on a lot of these things. And so sometimes with them, you know, we just kind of flip through and they use it to sort of jog their memory, or it'll just be more of kind of like a straight interview about their career and a little bit about what they watched growing up and that kind of thing. But, it's my favorite thing I've ever done.
Very cool. It's interesting. You're like Frank Costanza, first of all. I'm sure you'll be able to.
Oh, yes.
Like the TV guy. There's a clip you, at the beginning of your show with the sort of old guy saying, have a TV guy, don't need a TV.
Right.
What is that from now?
Any guesses, Clay? Any guesses?
I don't know. I have no idea.
It was so familiar to me. I know I've seen it.
Right. It's from The Lost Boys.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's Bernard Hughes.
It was bugging me so much.
Don't try to peel off the label because it'll rip the cover, and I don't like that.
I just remember that when I listened, I was like, oh, my God, what is that? What is that? Okay, thank you. The Lost Boys. So, yeah, he's the old grandpa who – and yeah. All right. Phew, thank you. All right. You have somebody on, and they're like, oh, I watched Golden Girls that week, and it's
– Yeah, you know. Yeah. And you know, it's fun because I never get to really exercise the academic portion of my brain, speaking of going to Northeastern. In the hierarchy of needs, I was usually more concerned about, like, trying to eat, and so I would not get to get into the sort of cultural studies stuff that I like exploring, which I get to do with the podcast. And I love hearing about what people did growing up. And the interesting thing to me, and I think this is lost on sort of future generations because they don't have as much shared experiences because everything's so niche now, yeah, is that no matter how far back you – no matter who we are now, if you go back far enough, we all watch the same stuff. So you have this common experience if you go back far enough through television, and it's interesting to hear from these people from all different kind of walks of life who do different things and to have that sort of common language that we can all talk about.
Yeah, it's true. And we kind of like – nowadays, it's just like you just binge a show and then you move on and watch another show. You know what I mean? Like it's not even like a thing like every week people sat in front – like. Literally, like, billions of people watched The Cosby Show when it was on, like,
oh, yeah,
at
yeah,
its height.
Well, that's the thing, too. You know, stuff's so niche now that even the most popular show you can imagine now, which I wouldn't even know what it is, but let's say, like, Walking Dead or something like that.
Yeah.
The ratings on their highest rated episode would not even have it crack the top 200 in 1990.
Yeah, it would get canceled.
Like, 1990? Like, that's not even that far. I mean, it doesn't seem that long ago. I mean, I guess it is.
In technology, yeah. I mean, in technology it is, you know,
yeah.
And the fact that everyone can time shift. And I was talking about this the other day where, you know, the last sort of cultural phenomenon show on a mass scale that I can think of, aside from things like American Idol and stuff like that, was Twin Peaks. And Twin Peaks was a show that it was on a Saturday night or Friday night or whenever you saw it. And if you didn't see it that night, you were out of the conversation. You couldn't yell spoilers, you know, for a show that was on 20 years ago, which people try to do now. Like,
yeah,
you
right.
had to see it then and there if you wanted to be part of the conversation, and everybody did. And it was a true event, and people would go to bars and have screenings of the show. And that's why I think you're seeing more of these sort of terrible event television shows like Dancing with the Stars and that sort of thing, because the only thing that you can do that people have to watch live is a thing that has a winner.
Right, yeah, otherwise you won't know. You won't be in on it.
Or you vote on it or whatever, yeah.
Right, but, right.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad, like, American Idol is finally getting the act here. I mean, Jesus, I feel like...
But what difference does it make? There's still, like, The Voice and, like...
Yeah, that's true.
The damage is done.
It doesn't go away.
Yeah, right. It's like if they canceled The Real World now, which I don't even know if that's still on.
Is that, yeah,
but
I don't know.
That birthed so much awful, awful television and is really solely responsible for all the terrible reality TV we have, even though I really did like the first few seasons of that show.
Well, it was different then. Then it just became like, oh, here's the, you know.
Can I swear?
Yeah, absolutely. Say whatever the hell you want. Say whatever the fuck you want.
It turned into fighting and fucking. That's basically what that show was. And it was interesting at first. It was really a social experiment. It was like, here's people in the big city that are trying to make it in the arts, and this is what it's like for young people. And then around the Hawaii, you know, Las Vegas, they were like, just get hot, dumb people to beat each other up and then fuck each other.
Yeah, right. And then that's it's like, oh, here's the gay guy and here's the black guy or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's like the tropes and everything. It's just
– when I was going to school, which was right down the street at Mass Art, I would always get the, hey, you look like Puck on The Real World.
Really?
Yeah.
Clay, I have to say, back then you kind of, you didn't act like Puck, but you looked like Puck.
Yeah, I did. And yeah.
How did you eat peanut butter?
Straight out of the drawer.
All right.
On top of my ramen.
Like a bear?
Just yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Ken, when you were in school, was that when you were in your bands too?
Like, yeah. We started in 95 when I was 15, and then we broke up in 99. So yeah, it was like there was a little bit of crossover when I was
That was exactly the time that I was going to school. Right down the street. Yeah.
That's a good run for a band in those days, actually.
Especially dealing with me as a teenager, because I was not easy to deal with. And I'm surprised they put up with me as long as they did.
That's pretty good for a Boston band. I mean, all those places you played are probably gone now.
Yeah, the Rat. So. I mean, I saw your band probably 10 times at the Rat.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I'm so sorry. And thank you. Yeah, I mean, the Rat. I mean, I started hanging out at the Rat around 92 or 93. I was like 12 or 13 years old.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Well, I had a big growth spurt, and I basically looked, you know, the same height that I am now, and they didn't really, and I never drank, so I kind of just went in and stood in the back and hung out. And
yep, it was very loosey goosey, and it was mostly Sunday hardcore all ages shows, like the drop.
Oh yeah, song. Yeah, they'd have at that point too. They sometimes would have two Saturday matinees and then a night show.
That's true. Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah,
wow, man, Boston in those days, we're all prim and proper.
No, I mean we were literally standing in that place up to our ankles in raw sewage.
Oh,
that's not even an exaggeration.
True.
So it's not such a big loss, maybe. That
not really. Yeah. No. I mean, I saw a lot of good bands. I saw a lot of terrible bands, probably more than the good ones.
Yeah.
Well, Clay, were you playing back then?
I wasn't in a band, but I was. But my friends were in a band, and I always say this. I'm like 99.9% sure I was at the first Dropkick Murphys show, which was there at the Rat.
Wow. Okay.
I'm pretty sure, because I went every Sunday, and my friends were in bands that played with, like, Ken's band, the Bastard Squad, the Cretans, Showcase Showdown, you know, like, so we're all kind of doing the thing. And that's what, and then I was going to the punk rock shows, they were like, and ride my bike around town. Like, yeah, you look like Puck.
You were hanging around with a Hispanic guy that was gay. And
Yeah. That went on to write comics or whatever.
Yeah. You married an Asian doctor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was the first Dropkick Murphys show was at TT the Bears. It was a 21-plus show.
Ah.
But the next day they did play at the Rat, and I believe it was their first show with Bastard Squad, I think, if I'm remembering right.
I think so, too. Bastard Squad, the Freeze.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Oh my.
And maybe the Outlets played as well.
Oh man.
You guys know too much stuff.
We don't want to.
Maybe I don't know enough stuff is the thing.
It's just stuck in.
Yeah.
It's like sure the TV stuff, you know?
There's better use for those brain cells for us, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, but what are you gonna do? You would just use them for something else, some other useless trivia or something, right?
That's true. I mean, it was cool though. Like, Clay, what town did you grow up in?
In Abington on the South Shore.
Okay.
Yeah, we both grew up in Abington.
Along with Matt,
both from Abington. Didn't that kid Nick Fitt live there? Who used to write a column for Maximum Rock and Roll?
Yeah, that name sounds real familiar. I think a little before my time.
He used to work at Alston Beat. If you remember that.
Oh place. Yeah,
I remember Alston Beat. I do remember that.
Yeah. But I was looking at, I mean, Melrose, which is a pretty white bread suburban town, but is the last stop on the Orange Line, and I was lucky enough that I could, you know, walk down to the train and go into the city whenever I want. And if I had been, you know, one town further north where I couldn't do that, or one town further north where I didn't get all the college radio stations in my room, you know, I think my life would have been completely different, because I wouldn't have been exposed to any of that stuff and I wouldn't have had access to it.
We were a little bit like you said, we were the town further out. Like, it was a big deal if we went to the city. Like, it wasn't just walk down to the train station, and our parents probably wouldn't let us, you know.
but we did go
in the city quite a bit. Yeah.
And get take Red Line in. But we used to do it. Like, it wasn't like a huge deal. I mean, we did a lot. I did a lot in high school. We used to go to Harvard Square a lot because that was cool.
We always did the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Harvard Square.
There were like used CD, you know, like bootleg CD stores and stuff like that around.
Second Coming Records.
Yes, that's right. Second Coming. They're all.
You know what I used to do to make money, and in my many schemes. One of the things I did when I was a real young kid, like 8 or 9, was I used to flip. I used to flip comic collections for a profit. So I would go through the want ads and stuff and buy, like, my son went to college, I'm just getting rid of his crap. So for like $20, I'd buy their whole collection, take out what I wanted, and then sell the rest for profit. But I learned through that there was a record store up in Salem, Mass, which I think is still there, which is a very good record store. But in the 90s, all these people who had gone to college in Boston in the 80s, who had these amazing record collections, like grew up, became adults, moved to the North Shore and dumped all their great records. Yeah. And I would literally go and buy them at this store, drive into Second Coming and sell them for 3 times what I just paid for.
Oh, my God. I love that. I love that idea. I wish I had the, you know, like the brain.
That sounds like a Durson scheme right there.
Kind of does. I've pulled sort of things like that on Craigslist and whatever, you know, the new age version of that. But that's great. Like, literally buy it, drive right it, like turn it just.
Oh, yeah. It was like, because it was a lot of like SSD singles and like, you know, rare sort of hardcore and like Smith singles and stuff.
Oh my God.
They were, you know, they were a hot commodity in the city, but, you know, people didn't have the ability to drive 10 miles north.
And here I am. I go into Second Coming to give them $25 for a Nirvana bootleg tape.
Yeah.
Well, I used to buy bootleg, like, I was into Green Day a lot. I remember buying like live Green Day CDs and stuff from there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I would probably pay $25 for that. I wonder where the hell the damn thing is now, but yeah, I played. Because you couldn't get that anywhere else, so.
No, not at all. I had a bunch of Nick Cave bootlegs and a bunch of stuff I bought there. I could still picture the, they were like orange covers they would make, like print on that orange paper tape covers of their bootlegs.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
A bunch of them I had still, I haven't seen pop up on the internet anywhere, like, cause where you can get everything, like,
right.
And, you know, that's, I kind of wish I knew where they were so I could digitize them.
Yeah. I don't know where all that crap is, but maybe in my parents' basement. But so you seem, are you kind of an 80s, or is it just all things sort of retro for you, Ken? Is it?
I mean, the 80s is definitely what I have the most sort of affinity and knowledge about, probably. But growing up, I always liked stuff that was older. Like, I was super into, you know, 50s stuff and 60s surf music and movies and that, like, Something Weird video kind of stuff.
Oh,
always wow. was huge with me. So, you know, I've come around to like some more 70s stuff than I used to growing up, but it's kind of been all old stuff, kind of in the pre-internet age. The joke I always make is I don't care about anything made after the year 2000, including people.
I like the people part.
Yeah, sure. There's no reason to. I mean, well, I saw something on Facebook, you posted the other day about you stopped off. I don't know if it was a yard sale or flea market or something, but it was like, and you bought an old Sears catalog or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yesterday. It was yesterday. I was at the post office and there's like a church across the street that was having a basement sale on it. Yeah, I got a 1987 spring summer Sears catalog for $2.
What do they have in there?
Amazing clothing. They have a surf and turf line that's like hot summer clothes for dudes. And a lot of Thundercats raincoats.
Thundercats, yes.
Yep.
I seem to remember there perhaps might be an intimates section of that Sears catalog.
Oh, yes, there is.
Oh, yeah. God, Clay. Yeah.
No, that was, I mean, all of us kids, you know, Elvis.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we all flipped through that section. Because there's, I was looking through it yesterday, there is some fairly racy undergarments in there.
Did they, like, sort of Photoshop? Well, I guess they didn't have Photoshop.
No, it didn't.
So,
yeah.
So you know, was there nipples or what's the deal?
Oh, there is a bit of nipple.
Okay, all right.
I mean, it's not Fredericks of Hollywood or anything, but we're talking garter belts and, you know, lacy bras.
We're not talking the top quality Fredericks of Hollywood Sears catalog at the church sale.
Yeah, I guess the church sale.
Oh, you know what I also got there yesterday that I didn't post because I gave it to my wife was two Pan Am stewardess bags from I think probably the late 60s. Like they're like travel bags, unused. Wow. Just the bags.
They look like those. They sell those bags now, like new ones. And I remember going with my granddad to Fenway Park. He was always a Detroit Tigers fan. We sat on the Detroit Tigers dugout side, the visitor side, and he stuffed so many peanuts and snacks into one of those exact bags.
Oh, yeah. They're like a little duffel bag.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Well, now you couldn't even take it in, probably, at the Fenway Park.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. People are going to pay hundreds of dollars for them now, and you got it for like a couple bucks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, awesome. I really enjoy that kind of stuff, like hunting and finding these things. And then anyone who's been to my house will tell you that they never leave empty-handed because I'm always like, I just have too much junk and you know, try to get rid of stuff. But I'd rather give it away to a good home, like someone who will enjoy it and appreciate it, than just throw it out or sell it.
Yeah, I have a weird thing about throwing something up. Like, I'm like, oh, I want to throw it out. Like, it seems almost like wrong somehow.
Right.
Like you're throwing out some kind of pop culture, but some things just, you know, yeah, it's hard to find a home for. But you know what's funny though too, you're talking about like buying and flipping records and comic collections and stuff like that. There's so much of that stuff, it's hard to do that nowadays because people watch and they know that stuff is worth money, or they think it's worth money.
Yeah, I think that's the bigger problem. They think it's worth money. Yeah. And you know, most of it really isn't. And I got very, very good at pricing things weirdly. So, and actually knowing exactly what's in someone's comic or record collection with only looking at about 5% of it. Because there's like I would start flipping through a comics box and go, oh, I know what this collection is. And I could almost write down every comic they had in there because you kind of go, oh, it's this, you know, it's this guy.
So right. if you had a long box in front of you, would you look in the front, or would you go down into the good bread, as we like to call it?
Good, yeah.
And pull out like 10 books, and then go boom, boom, boom.
I'll always do like the first few, and then I'll flip in the middle, and then I know if I want to go further at that point.
Yeah,
if I'm seeing Turok, you know, I'm walking away.
Yeah.
And no, in fact, I think anything in my house, if I didn't want it to get stolen, I'd just put a copy of Turok number one on top of it.
And then no one, if any of them broke in, they'd be like, oh, forget it. This guy doesn't have anything
worth his garbage. From the Space Knight, but that just only attracts me. I'll go right over to that.
Clay like, loves that.
I'll give you a quarter for this.
Yeah.
For ROM?
Yeah.
ROM is actually a really good series, and they'll never reprint it. That you can get the whole run of that for like nothing, and it's so worth it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I like ROM, and I also would always pick up Dazzler comics, which I actually thought were pretty underrated.
Dazzler has a weird cult following, I think.
Yeah.
She'll get a movie, I bet.
She should. Well, they did a graphic novel. It was a prestige format, mature readers graphic novel in the 80s as part of Marvel's Epic line called Dazzler the Movie. And it was based...
I remember ads for
that. Yeah, it was based on the Dazzler script, and it's actually a pretty good comic.
Wow.
Was there... an intimate section in that as well?
There was nipples. But sure it was just, yeah, it was just a page of disembodied nipples.
But it's funny though, you're right. Like, if you go through some of its, you can kind of be like, oh, this is a Marvel person, or you know what I mean? Because I was always a Marvel guy. I never bought much DC when I was growing up or whatever. And I still own actually, but like, so yeah, you can tell people's tastes fairly easily.
And this guy has 10 Conan magazine format things in a comic book long box, and they're getting all smushed in there.
You're shoving them in there?
Yeah.
Man, don't treat them. The president would be very mad at you.
Yeah.
Have you seen that photo?
No, I have not.
So President Obama is a huge fan of Marvel's Conan magazines, and there's a photo of him in the White House the first week at the Oval Office on the desk. He's got a short box of Conan magazines, and he's just sitting reading them.
That's awesome. He's like,
I like to think that like he goes in there and he's like, Okay, let's move this rug. opens up the big
safe
desk and like yeah. is like, I'm gonna put these Conans here.
Yeah, right here.
That is they could get wrecked. You know that new there was a just this week. There was like a big, criminal, the Ed Brubaker series. You could buy like the variant that's like a big, it looks like an old magazine. And yeah, they're hard to store them. I love it because I'm like, oh, I love the look of this thing. It looks old. It's amazing how they do that. I'm like, but how am I going to, where am I going to put this?
Well, you just need to get magazine boxes.
Oh, geez. For like the two magazines that I have.
So weirdly, I've gotten rid of probably 99% of my entire comic collection, but I've kept all my magazines.
Really?
Yeah, because comics, for the most part, I can get in nicer reprint volumes because I just want to read them. There's very few that I collect for the collectability. And so I can get them in a nice hardcover that takes up less space and actually looks nicer because it's usually printed better. Yeah. But magazines are very hard to acquire in a more convenient format.
Yeah, that's true. They're pretty much – that's it. Like you – you got it. You know what's weird? I was watching like the Esquire Network, and they have like this. It's like you can order issues of Esquire. I'm like, really? Like, why?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool though too with all the digital reader stuff. Like, I still own every issue of Fangoria, but I also have them all on one DVD as PDFs. So it's amazing to me that with a tablet, I can read 200 issues of Fangoria on an airplane.
And the person next to you was like, "What the heck is this?"
Yeah.
All right, well we've been reminiscing here, but let's talk about, you have the Vanity Project.
Yes.
Want to talk about that for a little bit?
Yes. Yeah. Almost everything I do is a Vanity Project.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, it's a full-length album I recorded at the Nerdist showroom at Meltdown Comics out in LA back in February.
Very cool. Perfect.
Oh, that place is amazing. I had no interest in doing an album, and because I always think that comedy albums are very lazy. Like, let's just record a live show, throw it on there, boom, done. And it's comedy's such a live format. Like, you have to kind of be there to see a stand up show, and it's missing something when you just throw it on a CD.
What about like someone's hour on Netflix or something? Do you feel the same way or?
Yeah, I almost universally don't like them because it feels like you're seeing a photograph of a painting. You know what I mean? It's meant to stand there in front of it.
Right.
But sometimes you get ones that do something different. They're more like a documentary, like a concert film, like Todd Berry's Crowdwork special.
Oh, that was great. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's like a travelogue and a live show. You know, it puts it in a different context. So I didn't want to do one for that reason. And also I really feel like they're all just these self-indulgent vanity projects. And I was going out to LA. I usually go out every year, a few times a year. And in January, I go for a couple of weeks to record episodes of TV Guidance Counselor. Cause that's where the people to interview are. And I have some very good ones coming up, by the way, from that trip. But and I got an opportunity to do a long set at Nerdmelt, and I love that room. I've never had a bad set there. Some of the best sets in my life where I've just been like, all right, I'm not ever doing comedy again now. I think I've did it, and it's done. It's not going to reach that height. So I was like, I'll record it and see how it comes out. And I was oddly pleased with how it came out. And I weirdly managed to convince Laura Keitlinger and Greg Proops to open the show.
Oh, wow.
And it was packed, and it was really fun, and so that's what the record is, and it comes out May 20th, and I'm doing the record release at the Middle East on the 27th. I have some limited edition physical copies and merchandise and stuff for that night only. I also commissioned a theme song for the record, so it's a little bit different than a regular comedy record. Like, it has an opening theme song and credits, and I tried to make it a little bit more interesting than just here's a recording of me talking.
Wow, that's very cool. Very, very, very good.
Oh, thanks.
Yes, the Middle East. Hey, well, we know someone who works there.
Yeah, I've never been there before.
You're kidding.
No, I have been. Yeah. Actually, I got, when I was in my band, I got two different leather jackets stolen there. Exactly 365 days apart while we were playing.
Whoa.
Clay, you better.
Hey, it wasn't me. The first time I ever went there, I put on a show. I got kicked out for underage drinking. So
nice.
Maybe first time I stepped on, though. Maybe you can look through, find Ken's jackets.
Oh yeah, I'll look in lots of stuff. Sure.
What, 20 years ago? I mean, I'm sure.
Probably was about 20 years ago. Yeah.
We do have a lot of Sears catalogs in the office. Oh,
yeah, well. Nice. Although, weirdly, all the racy sections are missing.
Yeah, it's weird.
They're in the men's room.
As soon as I got a desk job there, I pulled all my Sears catalogs.
I have noticed Clay got really into decoupage lately.
Oh, he's into some weird stuff, that guy.
Did you guys go into the dirty decoupage night? It's like replacing paint nights at bars.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, the Middle East does, what do you call it, burlesque, right?
That's true, yeah.
They still do burlesque there? Sure, I think. Nothing is out of the realm of possibility.
So are you proposing a dirty decoupage night with burlesque and, like, themed drinks and, you know, you just get a bunch of old porn mags and decoupage, like, a chair or something?
We get
just book it right after your show, so it's like everyone's out there with their paste and...
I'm okay with that.
Like, when is that show going to load out? You got to get this. Got to get these paces set up. You
got to get the decoupage there.
My Mod Podge is drying out.
Oh, my God. I don't think anybody has any idea what we're talking about, but it's okay. No. Nobody's listening.
I'm used to that. Both things with me.
Oh, good. So you, when did you start doing stand-up, though, if you don't mind?
Yeah, I... Why would I mind? How dare you ask me?
No one to, like, admit.
You know, Matt, I thought we went over this.
Do you guys have guests on who you ask them something and they're like, "Who the fuck do you think you are?"
Oh, that would be great. No, I did have somebody though say, "Hey, could you go and edit that out? Could you edit this out?" And it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was really. It was. I won't say who it was, but it was kind of insane because, like, I had already done it. Really, like, yeah, I was done, and then they were like, "Hey, you know, I thought about it. And I didn't like what I said there. Can you?" And I was like. Dude, I think like the first one, I was like, yeah. And then he emailed him again. He was like, hey, could you do it? And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I don't even.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. I think it.
We
I
just
think
want
it,
these things in the can. And then
once I'm done editing, I don't want to go back.
Yeah, I think in 200-ish guests, I've only had that happen maybe 3 times with my show. But I started doing stand-up in 2003 when I lived in London. And then I came back to Boston 2004-ish, beginning of 2004, end of 2003, and just kept doing it here.
And you didn't hang on to the British accent.
No, weirdly, here's the weird thing. My Boston accent got unbelievably bad when I lived in the UK.
Oh, wow.
Did people think it was weird, or did they think it was...
No, they didn't even notice. But I think it's because I lived in London, and the sort of Cockney thing was vaguely close to it. So my brain kind of just went to default settings or something. When I first started in the UK, it was right when the Iraqi war broke out and they couldn't introduce me as being American. So they had to introduce me as being Canadian.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. That's weird.
Yeah.
Canadian Ken Reed.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of Canadians doing stand up there, so it wasn't that odd. But I insisted one night that I be, you know, introduced as American and I couldn't even do my set. I got completely booed.
Oh, my gosh. What? This is London, though. This isn't like...
Yeah, it was probably the most unpopular in London.
Wow. That's crazy. Wow. Oh, I'm glad you made it out of there. That's
true. I just like London.
So did you take a class in order to get rid of the Boston, or are you just kind of like...
No, it's just hard work.
Yeah.
Although when I'm angry or tired, it comes out. So if I'm if I'm driving in the morning, it's... It's full on Dorchester in there.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
I'm with you too, Ken. For the same reasons, I used to do a lot of spoken word back like in the 90s. And people told me, like, the feedback I got from my class was that, like, the accent was too much. So then I sort of trained myself out of it. Mm-hmm. But it's not like I don't have it sometimes.
Yeah, and it's always the weirder things that it comes out on. Like, it's very difficult for me to say the word garlic correctly.
Oh,
yeah. Like an R in the middle. I was like, garlic, and I'm like, what the hell? You know, that kind of thing.
Garlic.
Or ending sentences with that Irish ch sound. So, like, what's a word that would have that at the end? Like, I can't even think. Ace is like a weird... at the end of stuff, that's a Boston thing that comes from an Irish accent. So instead of saying eight, you would say eight.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. Like eight. I always say Arlington, the town. That one always gets me. I don't know why.
Like, yeah, there's certain words that are
Arlington sounds so weird, though. You know what I mean? Arlington.
It does. It does.
Sounds like the robot train voice.
Yeah. I I have a weird thing about, like, I, you know, it's not so much now, but I didn't like people having information about me without me kind of giving it to them. And so when you open your mouth and you have a very distinct accent and they know where you're from, they have like a leg up on you.
Yeah, that's true. They're like, oh, you're from Boston. Like,
yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Actually, so sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's like really... it matters.
Yeah, I'm from South of Boston, all right?
Ugh.
Weird. Yeah, because I don't think I have it, and then I go somewhere else, and they're like, oh, hey, you're from Boston, huh? I'm like, oh, man.
Why are you punching people?
He does do that. Yeah,
yeah, that might be giving it away.
Yeah.
But, so stand-up comedy, though, let's just, I don't know why, I've always been fascinated by just the idea of it, the sort of psychology in it, almost. It's like, I like to, for some reason, I always like Seinfeld. And I like watching comedians in cars getting coffee because he kind of like – he goes into it a little bit, not about like what comedy is all about, not just like telling jokes, you know.
Right.
The idea of like –
it's one of the most brilliant things that
I
exists.
I love that show. It's so funny. But, you know, it's like you get into like – it's like, well, hey, I don't do bits and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like it's weird. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole lingo and in a language and a jargon that goes along with it that is kind of fascinating when you – because the weird thing about stand-up is if someone's really bad at it, they make it seem easy because you go, this person sucks. I could do better than this. But if someone's really good at it, they also make it seem easy because you don't notice that they're doing anything. It just seems like they're talking off the top of their head.
Right.
And unlike, say, a band or something where there's a visible skill. So, you know, someone's very good at guitar, you can see them mechanically good at guitar. With stand-up, if you're good at the mechanics of it, the better you are, the less obvious it is that there are mechanics to it. So it's a very odd art form that is sort of deceptively simple for most people as a viewer, I think. And it's also very difficult because... you know, again, with a band, if you see someone that a band that's terrible, you can at least go, the guitar player was really good, or the guy had a good voice, they just sucked. But with stand up, you're just like, that guy sucks. They're not like, wow, you know, his skills were really good, but his material is bad. It's just like, I hated that. And most people go, that stand up was terrible, I hate stand up. But they don't go, that band was awful, I hate music.
Right, that's true.
Right.
Well, it's kind of funny, too, like how people. I went to see Aziz Ansari in Boston. He had like five shows or whatever. Like, he sold out. It was great. But like, I went with this one person who, she was like in her 30s. She's like, she was saying, like, she posted on Facebook, comedy show.
Yeah.
She had never been to a thing. And this was to her, it was like going to Fenway and be like, sports event.
Oh, yeah. It's like someone goes, let's go to the movies and see movie. And you're like, what would you? And the weird thing is too that you get a lot of people who get very mad when they don't like the show, and it's subjective. It's not for everybody. Your job isn't to make everybody like the thing you're doing. And it's like, yeah, if you go, let's go see movie, and you end up in a Saw film, and you're offended that it's not appropriate and violent, and it's like, we came to see movie. We didn't want to see this kind of violence.
Yes.
It's right. Like a Dave Attell show is going to be a different group of friends you want to go to than to an Aziz Ansari show. Unless, of course, those people are into both of those things. But like, you know, it's different.
Yeah. Why did you even come? That was the thing that I was like, you've never heard of Aziz Ansari? Like, you don't know who he is. You've never even been to a comedy show. Why are you here?
Yeah. It is strange. And you get a lot of people like, oh, do you write your own stuff? And it's like, well, yeah, why else would you even do it? Isn't that the whole point?
Stand up.
I steal it from other people. Yeah.
A lot of people do.
I do a lot of Amy Schumer when I'm, you know, she does a lot of period jokes and stuff. I just steal from her.
Yeah. A lot of people do. So it's definitely interesting, and it's definitely not what I thought. I always wanted to do stand-up, and I'm not a musician at all. I just ended up singing in that punk band because I was, you know, probably the biggest jerk that they knew. I kind of would have rather have done stand-up. And so once the people with musical ability were no longer at my disposal, I started actually doing it. And I thought it would be like talking in between songs because you'd play a show, I'd crack a joke, everyone would laugh. And it's not like that at all. It's very, very different. And but in a lot of ways, much more satisfying. And the thing that the kind of evil thing that I like about it is not necessarily getting laughs or the attention. It's the ability to sort of manipulate an entire room of strangers into reacting the way you want them to.
You're manipulating them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it really is, though. You know, you're using like magician skills where it's, you know, misdirection, and you're getting them to an outcome that you want. And it's usually a laugh, but it could be really anything, you know. And that's interesting to me.
It's pretty cool. I mean, on the one hand, they're there to laugh. I mean, they paid money. They want to laugh, I suppose. But on the other hand, you can't just like throw any old knock knock joke out there.
Sometimes that works against you too. Like if you do a weekend, you'll notice that like the Friday night show is usually always harder because those people are like, I worked all fucking day. You think you're funny, you better make me fucking laugh. Like there's a weird adversarial kind of aspect to it. And on the Saturday, people are kind of like, I've been relaxing all day. This is a good time. I'm here for fun.
Wow, hey, look at that. That's great. Yeah. I mean, not great if you're on Friday, I guess. If you're the Friday.
Yeah, it's odd, you know. It's there's sort of two camps where people go, you know, you should do material that's so funny everybody would enjoy it and anyone could do that joke. And then there are people who think, you know, you should do material that only you could do and not everyone might like it, but the people who like it really like it. And the next day, if they're trying to explain to their friends why it was funny, the people would be like, I have no idea. I don't understand what you're talking about. That's the kind of stuff that really you experience and you have to see live and is, you know, in the moment and you kind of have to be there for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so do you have like a style? Are you like, or do you just kind of,
it's
funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I always just did the kind of stuff that I liked, like I wanted to hear and not what I thought people wanted to hear and didn't think it was unusual. But over the years, I've been told time and time again that like what I do isn't stand up or it's, you know, it's different than stand up or from bookers, like it's too confessional or something. But it's mostly stories and stuff of just here's some stuff that happened. You know, it's not observational stuff. And for years, and it's only recently after, you know, 12 or 13 years doing stand-up that I started even doing stuff about like pop culture and stuff, which obviously occupies a huge part of my brain. But one of the reasons I never did do that stuff on stage was because I always thought, you know, what's interesting about my experience with that, or what have I thought about that thing that everyone couldn't just come up with on their own, you know? So I always try to do stuff that was unique to me. Like, here's the thing that I experienced. So, you know, you're not going to have this experience. So it's going to be interesting to you. And that's kind of different than what some stuff is.
Mm. You know, it's weird to me. As you talk about, we talked a little bit about shared experiences. I saw Chris Hardwick, actually, and I don't even remember. I feel bad. The person who opened up for him is really funny, but he mentioned like Cyclops from the X-Men. Right.
Yep.
Now, like when I was a kid, I didn't think anybody else in the world knew who Cyclops was. You know what I mean? Like but he talked about Cyclops and the X-Men. He shoots lasers out of his eyes and sometimes he misses.
Yeah.
You know, like he's looking right at you and he misses you. And I was like, oh my God, that's a brilliant joke. I never even thought of that. I've been reading X-Men comics like 30 years and I never even thought that Cyclops misses with his eye blast, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, well, the world is very different now with this stuff. And I used to do a bit about this on stage, and they asked me to do like a keynote speech at a convention one year, and I did this, and some people loved it, and other people, I think, still have a fatwa against me. But, you know, it's basically like when we were growing up, you kind of suffered for liking this stuff. And I often cursed my interests. And there's a story that I tell about being at the New England Comics in Malden, the old location. And the guy was the manager was narcoleptic and he'd fall asleep and then kids would steal everything and he'd get up and just start hitting people. And, you know, one day I witnessed this horrible ordeal where he thought this little kid was stealing comics because he had a comic shaped thing under his shirt, but it was a heart monitor. And he ripped this kid's shirt off. And then this kid came out of the Dungeons and Dragons section and just decked the guy, and I thought he had killed him, and you know, which a horrible experience. And then my point was, but the next week I was back there to get my comics because you kind of had to.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't that you wanted to, you had to. And you know, I remember,
like, oh, I gotta see how it goes this week.
Yeah. And I, you know, the joke I make is like, if that had happened at the place where you get your insulin, you might think about just dying. You know, you're like, maybe I won't go.
I'm not going to go back to that. I'll find another place to get my.
And like conventions, I was, you know, one of the only kids ever there. It was all guys that smelled like Italian subs and, you know, very weird places. And now there's like girls and families and it's nice.
I know, but it's still kind of weird, isn't it?
It's like, very weird.
Okay. I'm not the only one.
No, and it, like, I remember in fourth grade I had a huge crush on this girl, Courtney McElhaney, and I told her, and this was the highest compliment I could think of, that she looked exactly like Brett Blevins' depiction of Ilyana Rasputin in the New Mutants.
I didn't think that was Ilyana Rasputin.
Yeah. And I think she just called me gay and smacked me. You know, I mean,
yeah, that was kind of a weird thing. It wasn't even like you were a nerd. Like, that wasn't as, yeah, I feel like I got called gay a lot too. It's like,
oh yeah,
I just, well, liking Boston comics make me gay.
Like, Boston. But even just the fact that you can go to Target and buy shirts with, you know, Ambush Bug on them, or like the most obscure characters, you know, that's crazy.
I know, it's weird. It's not even like, okay, Batman. I can see Batman, but, like, yeah, they get some weird, like, yeah, you're like, wow, I can't believe they had, like, hey, there was an Ant-Man movie, for crying out loud. I mean,
yeah, I mean, even that, if you wanted a shirt with a comic character on it when we were growing up, you had to special order it, and it pretty much only came in extra large.
Yeah, it was expensive.
Yeah.
I also, like, there's this thing, too, where it's, like, I'll see, like, little kids and, like, want to, like, identify with them or, like, talk with them or something. And part of it is really cool because you're, like, kids, like, they'll come into my office because it's, like, kind of open in there. And they're, like, oh, look, Spider-Man. I'm, like, yeah, Spider-Man. Oh, look, you got the Hulk there. I was, like, yeah, that's the Hulk. But then other times, like, I'll talk to, like, a little kid and be, like, hey, you're Team Cap, huh? Yeah, Captain America, or you're Iron Man. And they just don't even, like, really care. That's just the shirt they're wearing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's what they're.
It's like, you know, it's so ubiquitous that it's just like, it doesn't matter. It just could be a Minion or like an Iron Man, but they don't really care. It's just like somebody gave them the shirt.
Yeah, it's just a design. You know, it's like their parent put them in a Patriots jersey. It, you know, it's right about that. Yeah,
doesn't mean they're a big fan of the team.
Most of the time, it is very. They are like, yo, I love Spider-Man. You know, he's the one that shoots the webs. Sometimes it's like, oh, you don't even know what that is. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he's Superman. I thought you knew what Superman was. Okay.
It's a very strange world. If you saw somebody wearing anything with a comic, anything on it, you could assume they knew everything about that comic and you would be correct.
Yeah.
It is funny too, because just even a couple years ago, I have two nephews and they're teenagers or whatever. And I asked my sister-in-law, I'm like, what do they want for Christmas or whatever? And my nephew Charlie likes like a lot of this stuff. He doesn't collect comics like on a weekly basis, but like, you know, he likes all this stuff. And she's like, you just buy him whatever you think you would like. You guys have the same taste. I'm like, oh my God, he's like 13 and I'm 38. Why do we have the same taste?
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, but it's funny that was like, I just laughed at that. I'm like, is there something wrong with me or what?
I was talking to somebody yesterday about like, I used to be huge into H.P. Lovecraft when I was growing up. I still am, but nobody knew who H.P. Lovecraft was.
Oh.
Nobody. And there were some stories that to read them, I literally had to take the train to Providence, go to Brown University, and then have a librarian give me the manuscripts that I had to sit and read with gloves on in the library.
Whoa. Oh my God.
And that was the only place you could find some of this stuff. And I was always looking for the Arkham House books. They were really difficult to find and they were expensive. And, you know, I'd spend years looking for them. And I was in Oakland last month and there was this great used bookstore there and they had all of them. And I had completely forgotten about how I had this just quest for those as a kid. I had never thought to look them up on the internet. And it was so bizarre to just hold these things that for years I had just heard of or seen the title of, you know? And it reminded me that the world we live in now, if you're like, oh, I want that H.P. Lovecraft book, if you can't download it for free, you could definitely get it on eBay for whatever price, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of weird. There are no like holy grails anymore. Yeah. So when you travel, do you just go to old bookstores and stuff
I definitely do. Yeah, when I was in the band, yet another reason why I can't believe any of those guys still speak to me. I would constantly make like any video store we had to stop. I would go in. I was always buying VHS tapes, preview tapes, like old horror movies, anything. So every single place we went to that had a video store or a comic shop or a place that sold old magazines, we had to stop. And I kind of still do that.
Nice. I used to work in a video store as well.
Oh, what store was it?
It was just a video show place. It was mom and pop kind of operation.
I'm familiar with video show place.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
In the it closed what, around 2003?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
here's another great thing about me is that in the late 90s, early 2000s, when all these video stores were going out of business, I would go all over New England and I would just clean them out. I would, you know, they're selling all the tapes for $1. I would buy all the tapes. I would transfer all the ones I wanted to DVD-Rs and then would sell the out of print stuff or the stuff that's not on DVD yet at a profit on Amazon and basically get all the tapes for free. And I spent years and years doing that. And I'm kind of, it was weird because I loved those places and I miss going into video stores.
Oh, but
it was nice to be able to kind of go say goodbye to them. And I still have a lot of the stuff in my office right now where I am. The shelving from the video store I used to go to in Melrose, Video Gallery, where I rented my first tape on August 1st, 1983. I rented Dawn of the Dead.
August 1st, 1983.
Yep.
You know the date.
Yep. I still have the tape. They went out of business, I bought the tape. I have the first tape I ever rented, but I also have, when they went out of business, I bought all their shelving. So this room, I have the video store shelving from, like, my local video store.
Oh my God, you're like Tarantino. He, like, didn't he buy, like, the inventory from the video store that he used to work? Damn.
Yeah.
When I heard that Video Showplace closed, I mean, I went in there a couple months before and I was like, oh, this is kind of sad. But like, I never thought like, oh, I'll just buy all this stuff. I don't know why. It just didn't occur to me. But at the time, I kind of wish now like I had something,
even
one or two things to just be like, yeah, I remember that.
It's nice to have the little sticker with the store name on and the Be Kind Rewind. And you know, I think for years we moved away from the human touch of like curated pop culture stuff of recommendations. And I think you're seeing a backlash for now on some of that stuff against sort of algorithms. And that's why we're seeing sort of resurgence of, you know, midnight movies again and stuff where people want to experience things with a person a little more and podcasts too. You know, I think that we move towards things like Jack FM and completely DJ-less radio stations. And I think, you know, people realize they actually like that part of things.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's kind of weird. Like, as much as you're like, oh, talking, this person's talking, it is kind of very faceless to have, like, I mean, if you listen to Spotify, like I do at work sometimes, like, just put it on and let it go, you kind of just don't even notice it anymore, for that matter. You're kind of just like, it just becomes white noise.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice to have something that is sort of curated for you. You know, yeah. Video stores had that the person recommends things to you kind of meant something more than, you know, Netflix saying you might like this.
I know, which I don't most of the time. I don't.
Same here. Yeah.
Shut up, Netflix. You don't know me. But I would recommend, like, I don't know why, like, it was small town Abington, and I'd be like, oh, have you seen Natural Born Killers? You know, it's like, I love that movie. But I don't, you know.
I'm 7.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys going to the Abington Ale House? Can I recommend I Spit on Your Grave? God. Did you guys go to that haunted house every year in Abington?
I worked there a couple years.
Really?
Yes.
What did you do?
I was like a big, I don't know what, they said it was a ghost, but it wasn't like a, I don't know, it was a really weird looking, I don't know, it was just some creature that.
Did they put you in a Klansman outfit?
It wasn't a clan, but it was.
Yeah, that's not a ghost.
It was more gray. It wasn't white. It was like kind of gray, but it did. I think it was kind of similar. It had chains on it or whatever. You know, I think it was more of that kind of, not like a, you know, a white ghost. I guess.
Did you say anything?
Like, I know. I was just going, you know.
Okay.
Like,
all right.
And did you? It was kind of fun. Like people would be like, it was so.
You're getting a reaction.
Yeah, I guess it's like stand-up comedy, but it does give you the sense of power. You're like, ha, 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 I just scared that person.
What was the best score you guys ever got at Fundar Mountain?
Oh, I don't remember. That was a long time ago. Oh my god, I did go there though, definitely.
Clay, did you ever go to Fundar Mountain?
What is that?
It was the golf course that was there with the
mini golf.
Oh yeah,
various colors.
I think I only went there like once or twice.
What did you guys do for birthday parties as a kid? Was there a place that you went to that was like a Chuck E. Cheese type place? Or like, what's the fondest child's birthday party?
You know, before the Ale House was the Ale House, you should know, it was Grin and Bear It. It was a Chuck E. Cheese wannabe place that was with bears instead of mice. So
And arcade.
Yeah, they had it was an arcade, but it was like kiddie arcade. They didn't have like Pac-Man or whatever. They had like skee-ball and
Whack-a-mole.
Whack-a-mole, yeah. And that was my first job, actually.
When
I was
really? What'd you do there?
I was like a busboy, and I fixed games a little, like, very rudimentary.
But these are cool jobs. Like, every single one of the jobs you've mentioned, you could turn into a romantic teenage comedy.
I probably could. I probably should. I don't know why. I've suppressed. I did write a script about a guy who worked in a video store, but it was almost a little too Kevin Smith, and I was kind of like, nah, this isn't going to work. But, I suppressed that Grin and Bear It memory because it was – I worked, like, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, like, every week. So I didn't really have much of a life. Like, the Saturday was, like, 12 to 10. It was so bad.
Yeah. When did they serve pizza, like Chuck E. Cheese?
Yeah. So it was disgusting. Kids.
Was there – could you play games for free or anything like that?
I mean, I guess you could. I don't know. I didn't really – you know, because then you get tickets, and what do you do with the tickets? It's just garbage.
But what was your favorite arcade game growing up?
Oh, my God. I was a Rampage guy.
Nice.
Yeah.
Clay. Afterburner.
Ooh, you like the virtual reality.
Yeah.
I think that says a lot about somebody. You're like, I want to save people in my state-of-the-art jet, and Matt's like, I want to destroy the world.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Well, it was so expensive and, like, ridiculous. That was my favorite part about it.
It was a real indulgence afterburner.
Yeah. Was it one of those, like, 50 centers? Is that what it was?
It might have been a dollar.
Like a dollar, yeah.
God, forget it. That was
75 cents, maybe.
That's a lot for, like, I mean, when I was a kid, the 50 cent ones were like, all right, well, once in a while. But I don't know. Like, yeah, dollar. Once I started seeing games for a dollar, I was like, I'm too old for this shit.
You Danny Glovered it?
Yeah, exactly. Danny Glovered it.
Have you guys ever been to, like, Pinball Warehouse or the Fun Spot?
I love Fun Spot.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Pinball Warehouse is pretty good, too.
Where is that? I don't think I've been there.
Excuse me. It's up in Pelham, New Hampshire, so it's right next to Salem, New Hampshire. They got about 200 pinball machines.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
It's only about a half-hour drive from Boston. They're not paying me for this. yeah, for 20 bucks.
For a half-hour drive from Boston.
Yeah, for 20 bucks, you get 100 tokens, and they have some really cool, rare games in there.
Wow. I love that this is a thing, you know, like old video games.
But again, I think that's what we're seeing is the stuff that we grew up with and missed, the next generation is reappropriating in a good way. So you're seeing all these barcade type places, you know, they want, even though you could play any old video game as an emulator on your phone at any time for free, you're getting people who want to go into places like a bar, an environment or a pizza shop that used to have that stuff and play it with people in the way it was done. And that I kind of like that.
I do too. I'm one of those people. Boston needs like a real cool barcade, you know? Like,
yeah,
we don't really have one. I went into Chicago and there was this awesome place, just a barcade, and they had
most cities have it. Yeah, most cities have it. The big problem with Boston for me is the sports really does kind of ruin everything.
Yeah,
it's true. I mean, you could go to any, like, a barbershop has to have the sports game on. A barcade would have to have the sports game on. And it's like, that's not – no, you can go somewhere without having a TV with the Red Sox.
Yeah, like, I want it to just play Hellraiser. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, play something
weird. I mean, Chicago was a big sports town, and they still had – they played old wrestling. They were playing old wrestling on the TVs in this place.
And that's why Chicago is better than us.
It's true. What is – Deep Ellum plays old movies a lot on their TV, which is kind of refreshing. But, yeah, you're right. Every bar has to have the sports game on, whatever it is. And usually it's like several TVs with several
things. Yeah, it's really weird. And it'll completely ruin like whatever the theme of the bar is. We're like a 1920s speakeasy with the Patriots on.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of weird. And like the Public House is right across the street from me here in Brooklyn. It's a very popular bar. And they used to not have a TV at all. And I thought like, oh, it's kind of cool. You know, and I'm a sports fan. I mean, I like to watch the Patriots and the Red Sox as much as the next guy, but sometimes it's nice to go into a bar and be like, okay, there's no TV, there's no distractions.
Yeah, it's nice to watch it by choice.
Right, yeah. And then they got a couple TVs, and now it's different. You know, it's a different vibe, though. You know, it's weird. It changes everything.
If I lived over there, I'd be 600 or 700 pounds probably eating at Zaftig's every day.
Zaftig's is always crowded, though. Like, you can almost never get in there.
you gotta know when to go.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I like the idea of the themed bar, but then the bartenders are trained like they are at Plymouth Plantation, where if like there's an airplane flying by, they like completely ignore it. So it's like,
right,
you're asking the guy about like, hey, did you see Poppy in a Homer? He's like, you want some home fries?
How about this? Like a 70s, late 60s, early 70s themed Boston bar that's just like walking into Friends of Eddie Coyle. And they only know stuff from, you know, 1973 is like the cutoff point, including all their tolerances. Actually, that may exist now already in South.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's called Fathers or something.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. I don't know. It's kind of, there's a place in New York that's like I think it's like the Monk's Den or something like that. But anyway, the bartenders are monks, and it's supposed to be like a silent bar. So whenever people are talking, you get too loud, they just go, shh. And they that do it a lot. It's got to kind of suck to work there.
I was over by Northeastern, actually, 2 weeks ago. I did a Q&A with Ben Schwartz, which was weird.
Oh, John Ravio.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I've been to Northeastern campus like maybe twice since I graduated. But my favorite video store was the Video Smith over there. And I used to spend a lot of time in there. And they had a great cult section. And it's
that cult section was the awesomest.
Oh, yeah. There was so many rare, weird movies.
Flowing back to me.
Yeah. And I bought most of their videos when they went out of business. But it's a liquor store now.
Oh, of course it is.
And you would never know that it was such a cool video. That was like a quintessential cool video store. And I also used to – I commuted, so I'd go over to Tower Video.
Yeah, I used to do that too.
Oh, I'd rent movies and then go into one of the lecture halls that wasn't being used and watch it on the big screen in the lecture hall. And like I remember one time I got caught – watching Frankenhooker in there.
Oh my God.
At like noon on a Thursday, and they tried to get me in trouble, but they couldn't figure out what I had really done wrong.
I thought I work at BU, and I thought about like putting a movie on in the giant lecture hall just for me.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like, well, who's going to catch me? I'm the guy. Like, who, you know?
And also, what's that hurting? It's like, it's not like anyone's using that room.
Right, right.
You're not charging admission.
No, it's true. Just me. You know, the funny thing is, though, when I first started working there many, many years ago, like, they have film showings for four classes.
At the Cherie?
No. It's actually in the building. So it's just, like, an auditorium in the building. But, like, the funny thing, like, and they used to pack, you know, they used to be a couple hundred people because you couldn't get movies everywhere back then. And now, like, they show a movie for a class and there are, like, two kids in there. And it's like, this is kind of a waste.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's terrible. And the professors don't get it. They're like, oh, we have to show this movie. I'm like, but they watch it on Amazon. They watch it on Netflix. They steal it, whatever they do. Like, you don't need to do this. You don't need to occupy this room for 2 hours for this, you know?
I remember to the point of like the Lovecraft thing, when I went to Northeastern and I was taking cinema studies, which has totally been helpful for me in my adult life. there were movies I used to have to go to a special part of the library, fill out a form. They would go down to the basement, get it. They would project it basically into a little booth, like a language lab booth. And I would have to sit in there with headphones on and watch it that way.
Yeah, it's but like they want to do this. It's so weird. And they're like, well, it's part of the curriculum. Like if we didn't show the movie, it's part of like the class. We'd have to give another lecture. I'm like, well, I don't know what the solution to this is, but it's pointless to show a movie in a 640 seat auditorium and there's literally two people in there.
Well, hey, let me know what they're showing. Maybe.
Yeah, sure. I'll give it a pop by. I'm pretty sure too that there have been like there's like a booth where you project the movie. So I'm pretty sure students go in there and have sex. Like I've never seen it.
Maybe people can go watch that.
Yeah. I know this sounds weird, but I think it would be hilarious to catch someone one day, you know? I think
I caught someone. I used to work at a cell phone store when I probably the worst part of my life. And and I was like 20 years old, and it was in this horrible mall that was just decaying. And I caught the manager doing it with some dumb girl who worked there. They were both really stupid, and they both got fired. And I had to be like the de facto manager.
Oh my God!
Oh man,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
I worked in a movie theater in Weymouth. I don't know how
the Cameo.
Yes, my God, have you been following me my whole life. I worked at the Cameo for almost 2 years when I was like in high school and whatever. And I think we had a manager who he drove an IROC. He was the biggest douche. We called him Eddie IROC. And anyway, I'm pretty sure he had sex with the upstairs neighbor in the theater.
That theater always smelled like pee.
Yeah, it does.
There was that nursing home next door, right?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. And it was next to the hospital and everything, so
yeah. Kind of close. Did you ever go to the Harbor Lights Mall?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a really weird old theater in there.
Yeah, that was like a sister theater to the Cameo. It was the same company. So we would get free passes every month, in addition to our $4.25 an hour wage.
Nice.
but we could use the passes at the Harbor Light. So like I would go there. Yeah, but it was a really crappy theater. I remember remember we saw Wolf?
Oh, yeah.
You left. You just like, dude, this movie sucks. I'm going to get a taco or whatever. And you... it was pretty funny.
And I think the original Building 19 was across the street from that mall.
Right. I think it's all condos now or something.
Probably.
Yeah, it's sad. No, not really that sad, actually. It was a pretty shitty mall.
It was very shitty mall.
I can't believe you know like all the places that I've like worked at and
Well, I also one of the other things I really enjoy is sort of old retail history and dead malls and you know old chain stores and you know Caldor, Zaire, all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah,
Caldor, yeah,
yeah. What things used to be, all that kind of thing. You know, like a totally normal person.
of course, normal people do these. It is funny to reminisce a little. I used to go to Leechmere a lot.
I'm looking at a Leechmere CD on my desk right now.
Oh, okay.
It's a Leechmere Christmas album from 1993 that you could get if you spent $50 that year. They would give you this CD with your purchase.
Wow, that's pretty cool. You still have that?
Well, I got it or it might have been a flea market like a couple weeks ago. It's sealed for like a dollar.
Whoa,
is it still sealed? Or?
It's still sealed. I have not opened it. If I open it, it'll be at Christmas.
Of course. Well, I remember like when I was a kid, my dad, you know, my family would buy all our TVs and VCRs and all that stuff. My dad was a Leechmere guy. He was like, no, let's go to Leechmere.
Well, what were his other options? He had like Fretter, Hi-Fi Video. I mean, Hi-Fi Audio, Highland Audio. That's what it was called.
Yeah. No, there weren't that many options.
Yeah. Sears?
Yeah. Is Sears still around? I guess they are.
Oh, yeah. Kmart actually owns them.
Oh, really?
That's weird.
My girlfriend gets mad at me for calling the Cambridge Side Galleria Leechmere. I don't know why.
Well, that's technically the name of that area.
Yeah.
That's what I told her. That's the name of the tea stop.
It is.
Do you remember?
It's not called that. It's called the Cambridge Side Galleria.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the Cambridge Side Galleria used to be?
No, actually, I don't.
It was a dump. It was literally a dump.
Still a dump.
Yeah. But this was like, you know, a dump on purpose.
Wow. Like literal garbage.
Yeah, it was a garbage dump. The Leechmere was there, but it was, which is the Best Buy now, but it was just a dump in a Leechmere.
Oh, my God. Well, I think a lot of that stuff over there, I mean, when you think about Assembly Row and all that.
They have some poltergeist stuff is going to happen to that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Assembly Row.
In the Apple store over there.
I used to go to all the time. I used to go to Paperama. And I used to go to the movie theater there frequently, Good Times Billiards.
Oh yeah, wait, is Good Times is gone?
They tore that way down.
I guess you're right. That's sad. I mean, not really, because
that place was awful. It was good to go to in the middle of the day because it's a giant indoor arcade, but at night it was a bar that people would bring their kids to.
Why do I keep saying it's sad? I keep saying all these places are gone. It's sad. Like, oh no,
my band played there once.
Oh, did you really? So weird.
Yeah,
were you an '80s cock rock cover band? Because I think that's
they had built into the thing and into our stage show. If we had like a little tiny smoke machine, but they had built into this big, huge, boxy room with like a huge high ceiling. They built into it into the light rig fog machine. Like that was an option that the house had. Like, usually you bring that stuff yourself. They're like, well, if you want the smoke, we'll just turn it on. Of course we did.
That place was like them going, I want Hampton Beach, but all year round.
Yeah.
They used to play like WWF pay-per-views on TVs in there too. So.
And charge admission, which is highly illegal.
Very illegal, yeah.
And advertise it.
I know. No wonder they're gone.
Yeah. I mean, I saw so many movies at that Assembly Square Cinemas though growing up. And I when I first moved to Somerville in 1999, some kid that worked there used to like my old band. I didn't know him, but he was like, hey, meet me around back. And I was like, all right. And he handed me this box and he's just like, don't open this here. And I got home and it was a case of those like here's the free movie tickets.
Oh my god.
So I just saw free movies there for like 6 years.
See, being in a band is
still there. I thought you died.
Oh no, sorry. You got a little
it can help.
Get you there a little bit. Oh, well, anyway, we have been talking a little along here. If you probably have other stuff to do.
I'm so sorry.
No. I think it's great.
No, thanks, man. Thank you so much.
This is a great episode. I feel like we've been keeping you a long time. Let's throw out another plug. The Vanity Project.
Is your show going to be mostly stand-up, or is it? It's going to be different stuff, right?
Yeah, so there won't be a ton of stand-up. I used to do a show called The Secret Menu at the Comedy Studio. It's going to be more along those lines. So I'm going to have a thing I call the yearbook session on it. Nick LaValle has given me his high school yearbook. I'm spending some quality time with it. I will interview him about his yearbook on stage.
That's really fun.
Yeah, we're going to do a live TV guidance counselor for that night with Sean Sullivan. We're going to look at the listings for that Friday night and decide what we're going to watch if we were not at the show. Probably going to do a damaged goods auction. I'm going to have some musical guests. Nick Chambers is going to do live Fake Song Friday. So it'll be fun. It'll be a fun, weird show.
That's awesome. It's May 20th.
27th.
I'm sorry. May 27th.
The show's
edit that out.
Yep. The show's the 27th. The record digitally will come out May 20th.
Oh, okay. That
so people can have a week to learn the lyrics.
Yeah, so they can all sing along. Yeah,
that's right.
And then don't forget to check out
merch there too, right? Sam's working on some merch for you.
Yeah. I'll have physical copies of the record that night for one night only. I'm going to have some shirts, some stickers, patches, and there's going to be a limited edition version of the record that night that is only available that night. That's in a pink donut box
with
a custom donut shop Ken Reed logo, and it's going to come with a pin, a patch, the CD, a T-shirt, and a book about the TV show Roswell.
Oh, really? Did you write that? This book?
No, I got a gross of them, but it all makes sense if you hear the album. It's all things related to the record. Yes.
You bought a gross of
I did.
That's awesome. All right. Well, and don't forget TV Guidance Counselor. Everything is on your website, I can read.
Yeah. Yep, it's on there, tvguidancecounselor.com. We have our 150th episode coming up in a couple weeks.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you. And that is with a super huge guest that I'm very excited about. And, I'm looking forward to that.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely check that out. And anyone listening, if you're listening, which you're not, check out stuff, please. Ken is he's a great guy. Apparently he's been stalking me for all these years.
I had no idea that you were working at these places.
He might have seen me in there.
It's very possible.
Yeah. All right. And definitely come back anytime you, anytime you want. For that
matter. Yeah. I'm happy to do it anytime you guys want to hear my nonsense.
Yeah. Well, if you have anything to plug or just want to chat a little bit about old Boston stuff or old malls or whatever you want.
We could do a Sears catalog, podcast.
I am up for, you know what? That would actually probably
call it the intimate section.
Yeah. That would probably get more downloads than our two podcasts combined.
That's true. Yeah. If we include images, maybe.
We call it like the Wishcast or something and just do the
Wish book.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they used to call it, right? The Wish book?
Sears Wish book was once a year. That was the Christmas catalog.
That was the one I used to look at sometimes. I never
read. Circle all the shitty electric guitars with the amplifier in it and also
silver tone.
Of course.
Every single Return of the Jedi toy that was in it.
Yes.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Nothing wrong with that.
Circled in blue pen. in my mind right now.
Well, those are kind of interesting too because a lot of the toy lines in those never got produced.
Yeah.
Because they would wait. Essentially, people would pre-order the toys, and if they didn't get enough, they would just not make them.
Well, that's terrible. All those kids who asked for those things never got them.
But it's cool to see stuff that never came out.
Yeah, it is cool. 30 years later.
That's right.
Yeah. Who knew? All right. Well, yeah, we can wrap up. But thank you so much, Ken Reed, TV guidance counselor, The Vanity Project at the Middle East on the 27th. 20th is the date the record comes out digitally.
Correct.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening.
Video kill the radio star. Video kill the radio star.
It's in my mind and in my car. We can't rewind, we've gone too far. Pictures came and broke your heart. So put all the blame on VCR.
Yeah, you look like Puck.